Monster Man, special episode, Time Elementals. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode requested by a Patreon backer. A Patreon backer? That's right, someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged at the $5 level to support the show. This episode was requested by David Fiore, who asked me to talk about the idea of time elementals or other time-related monsters, and more generally about how time travel works in fantasy as opposed to science fiction. If you'd like to be like David, all you gotta do is back at the $5 level yourself, and you'll get to choose a topic for your own special episode. And in addition, you'll also get my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I talk about the Deities and Demigods book. We're currently finishing up a section on Aztec and Maya mythology, and occasional bonus content, like the episode that I just did about monsters from the novel The Gutter Prayer. So, David, thank you very much for your support, and I hope you enjoy your episode. Now, normally, this is a monster-led episode format, but I'm going to do this one a little bit backward. I'm going to start talking about time travel, and from there, I'm going to move on to monsters with timey powers. And I think, you know, hopefully this will be kind of self-explanatory as I go through it. I think before we start talking about time-type monsters, we need to think about the role that time travel plays in a fantastic setting. Because there are ways that time travel and time stuff do work in fantasy, and there are ways that they don't. Let's start with don't. When does time travel not work in a fantasy setting? Time travel stories send the protagonists either into the past or into the future. If the protagonist is being sent into the future, this is almost always because there's some kind of implied comparison between the society of the future and the society of the present, or, you know, the author wants to explore, like, how a particular trend or change could be exaggerated in the future. And that can be something like The Time Machine, which is about sort of class division, or it could be something like Idiocracy, all that kind of thing. That doesn't necessarily work very well for a fantasy setting because the comparison with the modern situation of the fantasy setting lacks punch, particularly like the further you go into the future, the more punch it lacks. And I'll explain why that is in a moment. If you think about time travel stories that send people back into the past, similarly, they don't work in fantasy settings because, well, for up to three reasons. First, you have the problem of recognition. Even people who don't know or care very much about history have certain stereotypes about our world's past. And many time travel games essentially function on those stereotypes. Time travel stories and time travel games. So we're going to use the time machine and we're going to take it back to dinosaur times. Or we're going to take it back to the Old West. Or we're going to take it back to World War II. You know, no matter whether you care about history, you have existing mental images of Robin Hood or 1920s gangsters or cowboy times or whatever, right? That there are certain historical periods that essentially function as genres, and you have some sense of what those genres are like. And you can see this in things like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, for example, which plays with it really interestingly, actually. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, surprisingly sophisticated about its approach to history for goofball comedy about two slackers who find themselves in possession of a time machine. Or you can see it in Army of Darkness, where, you know, Ash goes back in the past to a generically medieval time period that includes things like King Arthur. But it's not meant to be a fantasy land, it's meant to be medieval England. So obviously, when you're dealing with the history of a fantastic setting, you don't have that. At a first level, players are unlikely to care all that much about the history of a fantastic setting. The only exception I can think of, you know what I'm going to say, is Glorantha. Because Glorantha does genuinely have a history that undergoes a lot of big, important changes. But typically, the histories of fantasy settings aren't as detailed. Well, obviously they're not as detailed as the history of the real world, and they don't have the same kind of emotional weight. So someone who is already very, very, very invested in the history of a setting, like Save with Glorantha, might think, oh, this is amazing. We're going to go back and see the God Learners, or we're going to go back and see the Dawn Council in action, or whatever. But most people just don't feel that way about the history of fantasy settings, even ones they really care about. So there's a very good chance that most of the players aren't going to know anything about the history of the setting, and an equally good chance that even if they do, they won't really care. It won't have the same weight for them as if they went back to the French Revolution, or they went back to feudal Japan, or ancient Egypt. You know, those are all powerful images that we have in our minds really ever since childhood, and that's never going to be the same as the way we feel about the history of the Forgotten Realms. The other thing is that in a work of historical adventure fiction, the historical setting fulfills the same narrative role as the fantasy setting does in a work of fantasy adventure fiction. I had a friend at one point who told me that she didn't like TV shows that were set in the real world. But in fact, she loves TV shows that are set in the real world. She just doesn't like TV shows that are set in the real world in the present day. Now, obviously, that's just, you know, a particular way of expressing that idea, but I do think that it's interesting that those categories are different for her. The narrative role that a historical setting fulfills is different than the narrative role of a contemporary setting. But that space in the narrative structure is already taken by the fantasy setting, right? The otherness of the place is already there in the construction of a fantasy setting. So it's one thing to go from our world to a different one, but it's different to go from a different world to a different world. In the same way that we no longer really feel a lot of like the comedy that's inherent in a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court, because the figure of the Connecticut Yankee is as alien to us as the medieval figures. We don't read him as a modern character. In fact, you could almost say the same thing about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Because it's so grounded in this like satire of the consumer culture of 1980s California, it has become a period piece. So those are all reasons why time travel doesn't function very well, or some types of time travel story don't function very well in fantasy settings. But there are time travel stories that do. And I think there are three fundamental ways that time travel works well in a fantasy role-playing game. The first is if you make it personal in some way. That is to say that we are finding out about particular characters' pasts or particular characters' future. The pasts or futures of things that we have already established as pertinent to the game that we are playing, rather than the pasts or futures of the setting or the world as a whole. Or you can go into the future and see what a particular character would end up like if they made a certain decision, right? This is kind of the mirror universe plotline. And that works because the thing that the player characters anchor onto is not the setting, but the character. Gives the time travel plot some kind of immediacy, and that's important. Now, the second way that you can do this is to use time travel to counter-signal immediacy. That is to say, to use it, present it as something that's really weird and alien, and that becomes a signal to the players that we're not in Kansas anymore. An example of this comes from a scenario called The Crypts of Indormancy. It's written by Ezra Clavery and published by Melsonian Arts Council. And if you don't want to hear spoilers for that scenario, you know, skip ahead a minute or two. Anyway, in The Crypts of Indormancy, at one point, the characters are trying to get into this tomb. And there are multiple entrances, but the big obvious entrance is one that you can't get into unless you know the magical password. And the characters don't, and I think they don't have any way to find it out. So, naturally, the door is warded by powerful spells, and the player characters will probably try and cast magic on it. And I think that what Clavery is going for here is to communicate to the audience that the magic that protects this is really weird. It's different from the kind of magic that the player characters have, because we're meant to be signaling that this is an ancient tomb and was built by this highly civilized society who had all kinds of arcane powers. And there may even be a little hint going on here that time is important somehow, and that, like, that things from the past may come into the future, which is sort of, you know, a thing you'd expect in a tomb scenario. So you may be kind of trying to underline that theme. So if someone casts a spell against the door, the spell fails because of what is called the temporal duplicator. The temporal duplicator is an effect that takes the magical energy of the spell and uses it to reach back into the past and pull the character out of their earlier timeline and bring them to the present. when that happens, two versions of the character now exist in the same place. So you cast a spell, nothing happens, and then weird stuff occurs, you know, bright lights, strange whooshing noises, whatever, and then a confused, unhappy version of you from a few minutes ago is standing next to you. And then all of your reality essence drains out of you and goes into the other version of you, who is now your character. Well, now, they're exactly the same person. The temporal duplicator just brought into this timeline a copy of you from before you cast the spell in the first place. So on a mechanical level, the only thing that's happened is the spell didn't work. But on a conceptual level, one of the things that's happened is you died, and now you're playing your identical reality duplicate. The only thing about the temporal duplicator is this powerful flavor of weirdness, and it tells you, hey, you may think you're a wizard, and you may be very knowledgeable, but these ancient highfalutin hoo-has who built this tomb, they know more about anything than you do, and they are capable of doing some real weird stuff. So when you get in there, don't assume that everything is what it appears to be. Don't assume that you understand all the strange stuff you're going to find. So there, I'm like, that sense of thematic effect, I think, a great way to use time travel in a fantasy game. Because it's so uncommon, because it's so outside the norm of what you would expect in a fantasy setting, it signals weirdness in a really important way. And the third way is as a gimmick. So, for example, let's say you have, and I'm sure this is a dungeon that exists, but let's say you have a dungeon where it's possible to access the dungeon at different times throughout its history. You know, you go through a time portal, you find yourself back in an earlier version of the dungeon, you steal a key, you know, you hide it under a loose flagstone, you go back into the modern day version of the dungeon, you prize up the flagstone, and you unlock the door you've been trying to get through. Or you go back to before this wall has collapsed and move into the next section. Or you go into the modern day where the wall has collapsed. You know, I'm assuming that it was once a palace full of temporal enchanters or whatever, and now it's a ruin full of hobgoblins. Their time travel basically serves as a mechanical gimmick, but also one that reinforces a theme of the passage of time, which is important in a lot of dungeons, right? Like, a lot of dungeons have this really deep time history that everyone always just finds kind of a chore to study, even though it can be useful in dungeoneering. And I think it's that final quality that the time elemental falls into. Now, I don't believe there's a time elemental in any of the monster books that we've covered so far, but I went and looked on the internet, and it is something that a lot of people have created for later editions of Dungeons & Dragons, and I thought I'd take a look at some of those time elementals and what their similarities are. So the thing that most time elementals that other people have created have in common is that they have some kind of aging ability. And this is particularly common in editions of D&D that have detailed aging rules. So for example, I guess in 3rd or 4th, there was a set of age categories. You were adult, mature, venerable, or whatever. And so this time elemental that a fellow created will move you one age category forward. Or the one that someone wrote up for 5th edition ages you for 2d10 years, so on and so forth. So that's pretty good. I mean, that makes sense that a time elemental would be able to control your localized flow of time, moving you in one direction or another along your personal timeline. That's pretty cool. It does feel like it would really apply only to a handful of player character races, because one of the things that almost every D&D race other than humans has in common is that they're very long-lived compared to humans. And it's something that when we imagine fantastic creatures, we tend to imagine creatures that are very long-lived. So if you have an elf that's 150 and now it's 161, I don't think it really minds all that much. You know, whereas if I suddenly woke up tomorrow and I was 51, I'd be quite concerned. Another thing that this fifth ed earth elemental has is what's called a fugue ability. And I really like this. I think what it's meant to represent is the idea that the time elemental basically can appear simultaneously at different points along its time stream. I guess simultaneously isn't the right word. That is to say that it can fetch duplicates of itself from later in its own timeline to fight you. And of course, therefore, if it dies, they're destroyed because they're versions of it from later on in its history, and it, you know, wouldn't have a history if it were killed. So I definitely like the idea that it can reach into the time stream and, like, manipulate creatures it can touch and you duplicate itself, right? It basically can do constrained versions of the sort of time travel gimmicks that you would do if you could travel in time. You definitely do some kind of predestination paradox stuff. Once I get out of here, I'm going to go back and take all that guy's arrows out of his quiver, which is inspired by something that one of my players did in a Time Watch game, you know, which was spend some points to say, yeah, well, what you don't know is that when this is done here, I'm going to go back in time and take all but one of the bullets out of your gun. That is the bullet that you already fired at me. Like, that's pretty clever, that kind of thing. That gives us some ideas as to what the time elemental might be able to do. It might be able to control some of the ways in which characters interact with the passage of time. That could include things like aging. It could include things like resting. Obviously, resting is important for how characters get their abilities back, so maybe it could deny you those rests or grant you them if it were on your side. And so if we come to the question of being on your side, then we have to ask ourselves the question, what does the time elemental want? Now, elementals are pretty neutral forces, and we often encounter them when they're summoned by a bad guy who wants them to go around and do stuff. Oh, I guess another, before I move on to this, I guess another thing that a time elemental could do would be to degrade objects, right? So if you had, you know, scrolls, they might crumble to dust. If you had your sword, it might rust. Or for that matter, it might regress them along their timelines. So your sword might turn into a bunch of chunks of iron ore. Your scroll might turn into some, you know, papyrus stems. That'd be kind of fun too. The problem is that you want to give this thing powers that demonstrate its timey character without making it just unstoppably powerful, right? Like if you say to someone, oh yeah, you have control over time, they can pretty much do whatever they feel like because you can find a way to make whatever it is you want to do an instance of time travel as an ability. Anyway, we need to figure out what it is that the time elemental wants because these others represent primal forces in our world, right? Fire elementals just hang out around fiery places like volcanoes. Earth elementals dwell in deep mines. Air elementals frolic among the clouds, you know, water elementals dwell in streams and lakes, and they're like summoned and controlled by people, but time is ubiquitous. Is there a plane of time? I genuinely don't know. So are they naturally occurring creatures that live kind of within the time stream and interfere with people who step outside it? So when you go through those gates that bring you from one age of the dungeon to another, are you attracting the attention of the time elementals? That could be a little bit like the Hounds of Tyndalos, right? That the Hounds of Tyndalos are sort of creatures that exist within the fourth dimension, and rather like in Lovecraft's story From Beyond, they can see you if you can see them or whatever. So there the time elemental doesn't really have an agenda other than to go and wallop people who step outside of the place that they're supposed to be in, temporally speaking. It doesn't care what decisions you make. It's not trying to enforce a linear version of history. It's just trying to stop, you know, or creatures that are just supposed to progress down the time stream in one direction from doing anything else. You could also have them be the kind of historical repair characters where, you know, their job is to fix the time stream. You know, that raises a lot of weighty questions about predestination. Don't know if your game necessarily wants to go in that direction. Like, there were those sort of time ghosty, spirity things that appeared in New Doctor Who, where they went after people who were supposed to have died but didn't, and who were therefore causing all kinds of changes in the time stream. I think, you know, that's a fun idea. I think there's nothing wrong with having them as kind of causality enforcers, but at the same time, I don't know that interfering with the time stream is something that you should be able to fight your way out of. You know, paradoxically, I feel like that is an example of time travel plot that actually works a lot better in a fantastic setting than in a real one. One of the challenges of time travel RPGs, like I said, I ran a very short Time Watch game, basically as a gap between chapters of the D&D game that I'm playing in. And one of the problems with it is that history is kind of a bummer. You know, I say that as a professional, like I got a degree in history, you can quote me. History's kind of a bummer. So for example, there are Time Watch scenarios where you're basically faced with this terrible moral choice that you have to preserve some horrible aspect of history, the death of someone that you wish had lived, or there's one where, you know, effectively you have to maintain the African slave trade because it's your job as Time Watch to make sure that history stays the same and that time travelers don't meddle or exploit it. And, you know, some of your enemies are out there trying to, you know, go back and steal the Mona Lisa or otherwise behave for personal gain, but some of them are idealists, you know, do-gooders trying to use their time travel to create a version of history that's more to their liking. And yet, I feel like if you play those characters, it's sort of a lose-lose situation. You know, either you lose, which is frustrating and disheartening, or you win, which feels like pandering and wish fulfillment. But even though the principles should be exactly the same in a fantastic setting, that's not really how it works out, because we're not thinking about, you know, real historical atrocities that actually killed all those people. In the same way that, like, in the Marvel movies, when a very bad thing gets undone, like, we might feel like it's lazy writing or whatever, but we don't feel like it's disrespectful to the people who died, because they're not real people and they didn't actually die. So I feel like Enforcers of the Time Stream is fine, but it's a bit boring because the players either win or lose, and if they lose, then nothing changed, and if they win, then time travel becomes something you can get, you know, you can alter the course of history as long as you can punch people hard enough, which is a bit odd too. It may also be that they're just, you know, like any other elemental, they're just creatures that have their own individual agendas and are just produced by particular pockets of temporal energy. Events or locations of great historical significance, or very powerful divination or time manipulation spells, just kind of have a tendency to calve off time elementals, essentially as a way of bleeding off excess temporal energy. And I know there's no such thing as temporal energy, but, you know, whatever. This is magic we're talking about here. The problem with a time elemental as something that you play is that, again, it's the familiarity thing. We all understand what it means to be an earth elemental, a fire elemental. You know, the Fantastic Four are a thing. We know that the rock ones are surly and grumpy and stoic, and we know that the fire ones are hot-headed and aggressive, and we know that the water ones are cold and unemotional, and the air ones are flighty and mercurial, etc., 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 right? Like, we have, you know, going back into classical antiquity, we have an understanding of personalities that maps to those classical elements, and we don't have that for time, and we don't have it for the power elements or whatever, right? Like, you don't, what does it mean to have a smoke personality or an ooze personality, right? So the elementals have immediate grab. Like, we understand what their personalities are going to be like and how we can manipulate those. We know that earth elementals aren't quick thinkers and we might be able to outwit them, or that fire elementals are aggressive and they can be lured into a trap. But we don't know what it would mean like to be a time elemental. And that's where science fictional elements come into it. You know, I don't know that this was true in the 70s, but I was having this conversation over this past weekend. We were talking about Warhammer, Warhammer 40,000, and I said, you know, the thing is, people love fantasy in their science fiction, right? They love Star Wars, Dune, whatever. But science fiction in your fantasy, particularly sort of like quite traditional fantasy, seldom catches on in the same way. I think there was a period in the 70s where it was quite popular, but then never really went anywhere. And it may be that time travel just reads like a more science fictional concept than players are willing to put up with. Although you could kind of rip Van Winkle, you could have characters go to sleep and wake up in the far future. That's something that happens in Army of Darkness as well. I mean, there are alternatives, but I think if you're going to have time elementals, you're committing to a kind of gonzo album cover fantasy thing already anyway, so that's fine, right? Okay, that's really just kind of a big spitballing session about the time elemental as a concept, but I hope that it's been a useful one. It definitely comes off as more of a Fiend Folio gimmick monster, but you know, I do like a good gimmick monster, so I think that there's potential there. I just don't know how exactly you implement it within a given scenario. If you have any suggestions about that, listeners, I'd love to hear about them. You can post them on the Patreon page, or you can email me or get me on Twitter. All my various contact information is at the end of this episode. David, I hope that you enjoyed this special episode about time travel and time elementals. Once again, thank you very much for your support. And if you'd like to be like David, remember that all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we're going to be looking at some more monsters from the E section of Monster Manual 2, and I'm talking specifically about elves. Endlessly subdividing very, very slightly different categories of elves on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.